Working Cows Podcast, Episode 62.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery here again, host of Working Cows Podcast, brought to you by the Global Ag Network. Got another episode for you guys this week. We're talking to Jason Mock of Constant Canopy. He's a guy out in Illinois. I was connected with him on Twitter and got a funny story. I ran into a guy at a bull sale this weekend who is a listener of the Working Cows Podcast, and he's like, I wasn't really into Twitter that much until you started recommending people on your show that were on Twitter, and then I started getting more into active, and it's just been such a huge resource being on Twitter and getting exposed to these different thinkers. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, see who I'm interacting with and see some of the other people that are out there spreading out-of-the-box thinking and ideas, go ahead and follow me at YP Clay Connery, and you can see what's going on there. Go ahead and like the Working Cows Podcast at facebook.com/workingcows. And before we go too much farther, I want to bring Jason on to the show and talk to him today about some of the really out-of-the-box things that he's doing, although he doesn't prefer that phrase, and we'll get into the phrase that he does prefer. But for now, Jason, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
The pinned tweet on your Twitter profile says that you're not sure what outside the box means, that you prefer to say that a man is only as faithful as his options. And since the first page of the Working Cows Podcast website says your daily dose or your weekly dose of out-of-the-box thinking, I want to hear what your perspective is on a man is only as faithful as his options.
Okay, well, first off, it doesn't mean what maybe most people think. It comes from a Chris Rock stand-up. If you're not familiar with that, a lot of my stuff comes from that 2000 to 2010 stuff when I was young and I kind of knew what was going on in the world a little bit more. But for me, now, my constant thinking is that just simply a man is as faithful as options. I don't think that we really explore our options very well, especially in agriculture. And I think it's a function of the capital intensive nature. You know, farmers are getting older. It's kind of rare to be a young farmer, seems like, anymore. I think a lot of people think about farmers in their county, and they probably can only count the young farmers on one or two hands. And I am just hungry to fail. I'm hungry to figure out what doesn't work, what works. And then each time you either fail or you learn something, it opens up this whole new spectrum of new things to try. And that's just kind of how I operate. So now it's winter, it's getting cold. I spread a little salt this morning, and this is kind of the time of year where I just try to think a lot of stuff and get excited for the next year.
How are you set up so that failure isn't such a burden that you can't bear to experiment a little and risk some failure?
Well, first off, you know, you don't have to bet the whole farm on anything. So everything has a certain amount of scale or, you know, acres that you try things. Yeah, I'm spoiled in some regard. Our family has been extremely conservative, which is very frustrating at times. But we are a debt-free operation. We're paid ahead. We own a lot of ground. We have livestock, and it works well, which actually makes it very difficult to question. I think that we have all these assets that could be leveraged. The thing that really boggles my mind when you look at operations, there's a lot of them throughout the country, similar to ours. But now your balance sheet might have, you know, six or seven figures on there. And what is your return on investment on those assets that previous generations has worked to get? And, you know, corn and beans and monocrops, a lot of operations are sub 2%, and if that, you know, sometimes we're happy to get our money back, and that just boggles my mind that we really fight to keep this going.
And what are some of the things that you're attempting to increase that margin?
I think it all boils down to stop worrying about feeding the world, and I think that I just don't see how we're going to have any value in 20 years. Just what do we have to offer if we're just, as things go automated, you know, as people go deeper in debt, trying to get the capital to farm that extra 2,000 acres and get all the technology to be more efficient and have a competitive advantage in that thought process, you know, what are we actually going to bring to the table if everything's autonomous? You know, it just seems like all the data that we're sharing is just actuary science at some point. So I think it's going to be a huge value to actually have customers and actually feed them yourself. So that's kind of what I'm striving. I'm trying to figure out kind of a gateway drug, if you will. That sounds really bad, but something that's really easy. And it might be just starting to sell sweet corn again, you know, just getting some clients and then and moving on from there. So I'm really thinking about transitioning some of our acres to organic. I think that's kind of the first step. And then, again, I don't know where we're going to go, but I kind of see the direction.
So what's the makeup of the operation that you're on currently?
Primarily corn and soybeans. We're starting to integrate some wheat. You know, that's just kind of the step to get some more green out there. We finished 25,000 market hogs for Tyson. I live right next to the hog barns and at the grain setup. So we've got a lot of manure to grow cheap corn. we can go corn if we want to and do it relatively cheap. But, you know, I just see the you know, at a certain point, the way this is all kind of manifested, the neighbors aren't allowing us to build a barn on another site. So we have all this fertility that we're just, you know, putting on the same acres. We're trying to move it, but there comes a point where our fertility goes up, things start tying up. And that was the initial thing with Constant Canopy, is how can we distribute this concentrated nutrients outward and be more efficient. But now I'm starting to think more vertical in the field instead of it just being an application, maybe get some livestock in our fields at the same time. You think about sun capture sideways throughout the year, ground floor, and vertically integrate.
Yeah, and that's ultimately where I want to go with this conversation, but I'd also like to talk about some of the things that you're doing currently. You're talking about integrating wheat with the soybeans. What does that actually look like on your operation? Because I is it different than what some people might be imagining it looks like, I guess?
Yeah, it's all contact. So there's been some research. It's kind of an old idea. And, you know, there's a guy from Ohio State that's been doing it for about 25 years. There's several farmers that have started it that are 10 years into it. But our specific context, what I was basically trying to do is figure out how we could capture the fast and make offense our best defense. Because we have this thorn, constant thorn, and when you have a high nitrogen system like we have, you have a really heavy weed pressure. You get the pigweeds really come on when it starts warming up in the summer. You get this carpet of henbit and chickweed during the fall. So it's a fight with our soybeans when we have that in rotation, because I plant them and they grow so fast, they get rank and they lodge. And when you drive by with a pickup truck, you say, oh, man, that's a tall field of beans. When you get the combine out there, it just doesn't make much. It's more forage. So it's been this kind of screen pass against that to where we've figured out how to think more in a time and space scenario. So the wheat, I don't care. I can grow 100, 110, 120 bushel wheat, the old-fashioned way of a lot of seeds. But the wheat is just trying to capture time and space. So all I want to do is have a really early wheat, and I want it to grow where the in between the soybean rows. I want it to consume water because it's a living root early in the spring. We're in a 40-inch, 45-inch per year environment. We're usually really wet. Hurts our plant health. And I want to get some type of contribution margin. So if you're going to cut your wheat yields in half or two-thirds, you need to really cut the cost of it. So we're actually planting the wheat in conjunction with cover crops and manure application. So the wide rows, the wheat, really low population, we get really vigorous plants, a lot of tillers, a lot of grain head per seed, deeper roots when you have a lower population, and then the cover crops can capture the nutrients in the manure that the wheat can't, and then you get kind of in this catch and release system. And I've kind of changed it here in the last 3 years where we keep getting wider individual rows, but wider rows to get solar corridors down, and that kind of makes the intercropping work. And basically all you're doing is leveraging the genetic expression of two different crops in two different seasons. So it goes back to that time and space. You're getting value for something in the late fall, early spring, and it's not handicapping the next crop. It actually has ancillary benefits. We're actually getting a yield increase and lower inputs, putting those two cash crops together with a cover crop.
Yeah, so that's my next question. What's the bottom line on this method and this way of thinking?
Well, the problem is I'm always changing it, just drastically changing it from year to year, and we're making these leaps and bounds. But last year, we were growing wheat. We put 1/6 of the seeding rate. We just used manure as a fertility. The soybeans are planted normal. So in our plot where we didn't add a lot of inputs, we had a 6-bushel yield advantage in the soybeans. And we had 32 bushel wheat. Where we had a plot here at my house, the winter was 108 bushel soybeans, and we had 32 bushel wheat. So we produced more, about $100 to $200 more revenue than a solid corn crop, but we spent about $150 to $200 less total in input. So, you might subtract. We're getting a $300 or $400 profitability advantage in that system. But then it goes beyond that. We're getting about a 20-bushel yield increase without commercial P&K to the corn the next year, just getting those living roots kind of awakening some of those unavailable nutrients.
And is this a process of weaning off of commercial P&K, or how does that fit into your system in the long run?
Well, I don't think it's around our barns. We haven't used commercial fertilizer for now 8 years. But as we, when I go to this deal where we're putting a lot lower manure rates, then logistically we can move it 3 or 4 miles down the road, and then we can logistically move this manure, get in the plant, get the roots going, and then not put P&K on these new acres. So we're trying to expand on this no commercial fertilizer, and that's kind of an easy way to do it. But I think in our scenario, you know, we're working with years and years of sins of conventional tillage. We have a lot of layers. I think we've kind of went through the plow layer, quit plowing in the mid to upper 80s. I see it with a shovel as this kind of layer 3 or 4 inches deep that really keeps our water from infiltrating when we're wet, and this really just breaks through with the cover crops and wheat, and kind of really helps the infiltration. So we've had some really wet years, and just getting this and following that just improves our functionality. And we're nowhere near some of these guys have had years and years of good soil health principles, but we're improving upon a terrible situation. We've got all the fertility in the world. If we get a half-inch rain every 4 days, we can crank out crops and beat anybody. But the true value in a lot of these principles is when you have stress, you don't have rain for a month, or if you have too much, how does it perform there?
Absolutely. So you mentioned soil health principles. One of those principles is integrating livestock back onto these acres. And this is the Working Cows podcast, after all. So I can't spend the whole time talking about row crops, or I might have a mutiny on my hands, especially when this is a bona fide episode, not a bonus episode. So when the bonus episodes come out, I get to do whatever I want, I feel like. But when I'm releasing this on a Monday, I want to talk livestock. And your Twitter profile does say that your work with Constant Canopy is looking at how do we close the loop between livestock and crops and grain specifically. So I want to talk about how big does that loop get? How far do livestock get separated from these grains first, to kind of set the context of the rest of this conversation about closing the loop and how small can we get it?
Yeah. I was just watching Joel Salatin. And I know this is just like a slap in the face if you're, you know, pro GMO and pro, big ag. But, I think he talks about 3 M's, and I don't know if I can say them off the top of my head, but he talks about mobile, module, and some other M. But I think everything's going to get smaller, both our markets and the ability to scale. And that's what's really keeping these young farmers from getting in there, is there's this huge capital investment that they think that they have to set forth and get a big loan to get there. So a lot of my experiments this year is we're going to have several animals in a cornfield. And with this transition to organic, we've got 3 years to kind of figure it out. And we're going to try to figure out a way to mobily move our livestock and actually give that crop an ancillary benefit from both kind of keeping the foliage in between the rows in check and moving their fertility around and take some of this bigger equipment, compaction, this other stuff out of the equation. And kind of my whole motivation in the sharing and doing podcasts and getting on Twitter once or twice a day is if we can get enough impressions and attention, I can share my story from the beginning. So once I actually do have a product to present, the brand, everything's going to be transparent from the beginning. And I think that's where the true value is going to be. We're going to, make these shades of gray. It's not just going to be a sticker, organic or non-organic. It's going to be more of a transparent story. That's the direction I'd really like to go.
Yeah, you'll have documentary evidence of the process. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes.
It's mobile, modular, and management intensive. I looked it up.
Management intensive, yes. And that's the one that really scares people.
Yeah, so what I was introduced to you through Casey Schumacher, who is one of the few Working Cows podcast listeners I've met in the wild. But anyways, and he was sharing your video about grazing chickens in between the wider corn rows. Can you talk a little bit about that idea? That video will be linked at the show notes page, workingcows.net/62. But can you share a little bit about what you're thinking of there and what the benefit is and the goal and all that?
Yeah, I mean, it boils down to, it just makes sense. As much as I love agriculture, I also like vacations. And I really like the seasonality of the chickens. If they're going to be outside, I can fit it in that corn's life cycle. Got a buddy I play golf with maybe 6 or 8 times a year on some Fridays, and he was really getting into this chicken tractor, and we were going to build one this winter. And I got to thinking, why can't we put them between the corn rows? So last year, I did about a 20-25 acre field of 60-inch corn that we were going to graze, and it just didn't work out. We had a big 9-inch rain right after we cut it, and we just decided to bail it up, and it really ticked me off. And you know, part of the problem there is, you know, we were going to bring out these, 1,200 pound cattle, and we were worried about compaction. And so, yeah, the idea is just to have chicken tractors that are mobile. I would have rollers on the bottom frame. And I really think that if we put our heads together, we could find a way to really scale this up and maybe produce, you know, I don't know exactly how many, but you could, I think you could get up to maybe 1,000 birds per 10 acres on something like that. And that's something that's a lot more marketable. You know, you're trying to sell something that's 2 pounds instead of bigger where it needs to be shared. So I think it's a start. But I also want to put some sheep out there with the new harness there that makes them graze down, maybe try some ducks, and who knows, I'm going to have a little funny farm out of the farm.
Very cool. And you're talking about broilers in this instance, as far as chickens that are grown to be butchered, you know, in 6 to 8 weeks or whatever the timeline is, right?
Yes.
What do you anticipate the benefits of that being, economically, from a soil health standpoint? What are some of the things you're seeing there?
From the beginning, I think it would be a real easy way to lease a farm and make it cash flow. So if you could lease something that was already organic, that would be fantastic. You could bring this, probably be a competitive advantage, but they have a tremendous amount of nitrogen. So if we were to wait until the corn was, say, 3 or 4 feet tall, and start to cover a V2 or V3 and have a carpet out there, we could just maintain the residue in between wider corn in organic situation and move that nitrogen around. So maybe you give it 10 days or 2 weeks to recover. You're constantly moving it. You're basically spoon-feeding organic, and you're taking out the mechanisms and just moving it to a chicken deal. And I don't think it's just the foliage. You got the bugs they're eating and all that kind of stuff. So from a disease management, there might be some ancillary benefits there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. What other, you mentioned sheep and ducks, and what other livestock are you thinking as far as how you could integrate them? Is there going to be more than just aftermath grazing? Is there going to be some actual
grazing?
Yeah,
that's the idea. If we can... So let's say we shoot for like a V2, V3, 60-inch corn, so there's tons of light going down there. That's really what I saw. We had a tremendous amount of biomass in that pearl millet and corn, and it didn't really hurt the corn's yield. Now, we had a lot of rain, so it never really ran out of moisture. But I saw there's just this huge difference between 30-inch corn and 60-inch corn and the biomass that we could have in between there. So, you know, if we get these animals out there grazing, then it should be able to support, we'll figure out what animals we want, and then once we get them out, and it wouldn't be, you know, 6 or 8 weeks between we get them out and harvest, we should have this big carpet, and we'll bring cattle out there to continue the grazing until, you know, it gets cold. You maybe just run it through. But really my mindset is, when we back up to what we talked about initially, you know, you might be able to get 2 or 3 turns out here. Maybe you make a chicken tractor that runs down manure injected out of your confined barns. So maybe you're seeding wheat and some kind of cover crop in wide rows in between your soybeans, and they're out there, say, from the third week of April until June, and then they might go to a rye, open rye field or pasture, and then they might go to a corn. But I think you could find different fields and different ways to mobily move animals.
One of the benefits of the chicken tractor is that it gives the chicken the opportunity to spread that manure out as they hunt through it for the bug larvae and stuff like that. Does the injected manure also bring in with it those larvae and different things like that?
I think so. I mean, there is a ton of, we call them mousers. They look like maggots up on top. You don't really notice that stuff that's in the pit in the field, but you get a tremendous amount of earthworm activity, especially when you couple it with living roots. They just migrate right around that injection system. So there's got to be something going on that would really increase some stuff that they would want to eat.
Sure.
I would think.
And you mentioned cows grazing in the aftermath. What are some of the ways that you see cows fitting into this whole system as we are the Working Cows podcast?
Yeah. I mean, it just all comes down to managing the maturity. You're in South Dakota. We're in Indiana. So we shoot for mid-September, and we're still, stuck in the mid-70s. We grew up the 80s. So there's a ton of growth past harvest, especially when we have a nitrogen boosted cover crop that's well rooted, it's going to grab a lot of sun. So we would just rotationally graze and section them off after that field. But, like I said, who knows what we do from there? I went to a really interesting conference that was completely funded by farmers yesterday in Fort Wayne. And the things that you can go to with this mindset, whether it be organic or soil health, if the margins are there, if your costs are so low and you're getting the revenue, whether it be just, getting more per bushel organic and then integrating livestock, we can start taking years off. Maybe we're just in crop production 3 years out of five. And when you start thinking that, then we can roll and establish maybe not just annuals but perennials in the mix, knowing that we can maybe have a year and a half to prime the next corn crop. So that's when it can really get interesting, putting some heavier, animals out there and roll that maybe initial first vegetation with a chicken and smaller animals into something larger the next year. So I think there'll be all kinds of opportunity when you start thinking kind of in this realm.
That's amazing. That's really cool. Was just by way of curiosity and connection, was Joe Mills there? Do you know Joe?
Yeah, I just met Joe in person. I've seen him a few times. We just drank a couple beers on Friday and down in Indianapolis. He was getting some beer leftovers for his cattle, and I met him down there. And then Monday, I saw Dan DeSetter there that, and he's doing the stuff with cows and what I'm talking about with organics and kind of this long rotation. And between the two of them, I'm just super stoked because, Joe was talking about selling blue corn for $15 or $20 a bushel. And that works pretty well. That looks a little bit better than 354.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. So Joe is a early guest of the Working Cows podcast. He was on episode 15. So I had an opportunity to talk to him about his beer cows and some of the other stuff that he's doing there. So very cool. Indiana's got some good things going on. Really appreciate your time today. I would be excited to continue to document the process and the way you're thinking. What does it all kind of boil down to for you in the end? What is the goal of all of this?
The goal is just health. I just really had I come to the farm in bad circumstances. My dad had cancer in 2010, and I took his spot. And my mom married the other kind of prosperous, or several prosperous, farmed on in the county, but another big farmer and his son just got a brain tumor, and he just passed a few weeks ago, and nothing gives you more shot in the arm of perspective than those kinds of circumstances, and I just value more and more every day just time with my wife and kids and direct, immediate family. And I'm not gonna go to bat and take any bullets defending things that I don't really know about. And I just have so many questions with our food system right now. And I just feel more comfortable rolling back. And I think that the people that are passionate with agriculture and they express their passion, they build relationships in the community, are going to have a lot more opportunity going kind of more backwards in a vertically integrated local, food direction than just thinking big and trying to just be in a, pardon my French, but pissing contest with your neighbor. So that gets me excited. It makes me feel a lot of passion, excited every morning, gives me a lot of purpose. So, just want to love the hell out of everyone around me. That's it.
Cool. Yeah, I think that a lot of times the story of human intervention is the story of the unintended consequence.
Yep.
And when we can simplify our operations, we, I think, can probably isolate or mitigate some of those unintended consequences when we can actually understand how the bird is interacting with the soil and the soil is interacting with the plant and that cycle. When we can understand those things, maybe some of those unintended consequences can be a little bit mitigated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just feel like it is kind of my, I think, eighth year of full-time farming coming up, and I think when you're young, you think you can, I think that contagious mindset of you can kind of overpower things and, you know, like, I raise this bit of corn. And as you get more and more things happen to you, whether it be weather or circumstances, you really feel like you're less in control and you'd be better off just letting Mother Nature do her deal and working around that. I think every farmer kind of gets that. Some keep trying to fight it, and then some just go the other way. And as I meet all these people and people start sharing all this information that's completely away from the kind of the corporate big ag community, it's pretty cool.
You're talking my language. You know, working with nature is what we're all about here on the Working yeah. Cows podcast. And when we try to fight against nature, it gets really expensive. And I think that's where a lot of those unintended consequences start to crop up.
Yeah.
So, Jason, thanks for your time today. Really appreciate the opportunity to sit down with you. Really excited about the things you got going on. And I, like I said, I would relish the opportunity to continue to document this process.
Good deal. Well, thank you.
Well, obviously a wealth of information there with Jason. Really good stuff. Really appreciate his time and looking forward to future discussions with him and continuing to give him the opportunity to challenge my paradigms as well as challenge everybody else's paradigms. So we are going to be talking with another one of our bonus episodes, South Dakota Grassland Featured Producers. Fascinating discussion as I hit the microphone there. Fascinating discussion with Richard and Sarah Grimm. They are doing some really neat things with the Mid-Missouri River Prescribed Burn Association. I encourage you to keep an eye out for that. As I said last week, I'll say it again, don't miss an episode. Go to workingcows.net/subscribe and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever it is that you like to go to get your podcasts. You can subscribe right there at workingcows.net/subscribe. And while you're at it, why not share that link with a friend and let them know that it's free and easy to subscribe to the Working Cows podcast. We'll see you later this week with another episode with one of our featured producers from South Dakota Grassland Coalition. Looking forward to talking to Logan Pribino about a tweet that he sent out that really piqued my interest, and he just said that he's going to change his job, or he's going to change his title to CEO of That Won't Work Here LLC. So really excited to talk to Logan about that, rancher from Western Nebraska. So we will see you later this week with another episode of the Working Cows podcast, and we will see you next week with an episode with Logan Pribino. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.